side of the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Greeno and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Greeno and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Well, now they often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mr.
All right, you may call us Speedo, Speedettes, Speederinos,
Speedballs,
Speedballs, whatever you want to call it, but you do have the heart and soul of Automotive Talk Show on Long Island, Motormouth Radio, with your host, Ray Guarino, his wingman and XO, Joe D.
Hey.
And Joe, we are listening to a little bit of doo-wop today, which is a little different
for
us.
Yeah, I was having a little flashback to like toddlerhood or fetushood or whatever.
I listened to a lot of doo-wop in high school. That was my thing.
Definitely.
And the reason we're doing that is because, you know, we try to tie our music with our guest or our theme if we have one. And today is a little bit of a different thing from Motormouth Radio. We're doing a tribute show. And for any of you who remember our Mother's Day show, you'll kind of pick up on how we're doing this, because a good friend of the show, Joe Oldham, who was an automotive car writer, a journalist, this guy did everything. Popular Mechanics for 19 years, he retired as the editor-in-chief.
Right.
You know, Joe was the only person who had been elected to president of IMPA, the International Motor Press Association.
Right.
Three times.
He was important. Whatever.
Yeah.
There goes that pun.
Editor of Motor Magazine. Book development editor at Hearst. He worked for Chevy, Action, and Cars Magazine under the tutelage of Marty Shore, another good friend of the show.
Right, right. He's been around for... He's part of the history of automotive journalism.
He wrote that book right there. I'm pointing to it. Muscle Car Confidential.
Yeah, I'll hold it up here. See? Yeah.
Yes. It's Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver.
That book is amazing. Some of the pictures there.
Highly recommend you get that to read the stories if you're a car guy. Well, Joe passed away last month, we found out, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we want to do a little bit of a tribute to him because he gave us two good interviews back in 2009.
Right.
That was when Chris and I were manning the show here. So you're going to hear another voice. You'll hear good old Chris Switzer, who's...
Who was
in control at that time. But we're going to do it the best we can in a Mother's Day
fashion. Control being a relative thing.
Right. So, Joe, tell us, this is going to be a real quick clip that's going to come up first, just to, Chris and I had given Joe the big introduction like we usually do. We kind of did what we just did, but, you know, Chris probably made it a little better than I did.
Just didn't yell, it's the big man.
Exactly.
Joe was on the show twice in 2009, in true Motormouth fashion. We gave him our typical introduction. Joe's wit and sense of humor came right through in his usual fashion. Boy, this guy was a rip. And in his very first reply, this is gold. Take a listen.
This is what Joe said.
After that introduction, I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say.
Now, you know, right away, you know, he had us at that.
Yeah, he's up to speed. Yeah. He's one of us.
Yeah, definitely. So we knew we were going to be in good company. So we had asked Joe one of those typical radio guy questions about how he got into journalism, because we were curious, because, you know, as being an amateur writer myself, I know Chris liked to write, we were curious how someone who made a living at it actually did it. And he gave us his answer, but with an untypical New York car guy spin that really typified his career and style. Let's hear what Joe had to say.
Here's what happened. I was a graduate of NYU. I was looking for a job. I read all the car magazines because I was already a car nut. And my favorite was High Performance Cars. It was New York based.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that effete West Coast vibe from it, like Hot Rod and Car Craft.
Had a little grit to it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And it was, you know, it was a little more gritty. It had that New York attitude. So I liked it. So I graduated from NYU, and I had a couple of articles that I'd written in my hand, and I walked in. And I met first the managing editor, a guy named Fred McArud, who was still a great friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he read them and he said, yeah, these aren't bad, kid, you know. And he took me in to see Marty, and bless his soul, he gave me a shot. And I just, you know, I went on from there. He taught me a lot as we went on. And I feel like, you know, at least I contributed something to the success of the magazine in those days. And it was a great partnership, and as I said, we're friends to this day. And it was great hearing him talk about a lot of the old speed shops out in that way, because, you know, I used to go out there as a kid and, you know, stand in front of S&S Speed Shop on Atlantic Avenue in Queens and, you know, watch the older guys pull up with their hot rods and, you know, be cool. And I wanted to be one of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my shot. It was a little different. I never had a street rod per se, but as you just said, I just wound up in what could possibly be the greatest job of all time, where, you know, I drove every new car that came out, at least the high performance models.
Right.
I took them to the track to test them. I drove them around as if they were my own for a week or two.
Drove them like you stole them.
I went street racing with them, yeah. And I got paid for it.
Right.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, that was, what can you say about a job like that, Joe? You and I aren't that lucky, that's for sure.
Oh, no. He fell into that. He stepped in the big pile when he got that one.
And that was the thing. These guys, you know, Joe, the story was told was he drove a car that wasn't up really what he expected, and he came in and told his editor, which was Marty, the boss, said, hey, I write this article, but I really don't have great stuff to say. And Marty said, well, can you back it up? And because the guys in the right, the left coast, Carcraft Hot Rod and Popular Hot Rodding, the mantra with them was, we never drove a car we didn't like, meaning they never dissed anybody.
PC, even back then.
So Joe said to Marty, I can back it up with track times, with pictures, with everything. And then Marty said, run with it.
Yeah, that was a hallmark of Joe's writing style. It's always been honesty. And when the subject of Mopar and Chrysler came up, especially in their build quality, his truth in advertising style just shone right through. And once again, like it or not, you're going to hear from him.
Absolutely. Let's hear what Joe had to say.
We used to write some negative articles about Mopars in those days, and the reason being they really didn't come up to snuff in quality issues.
And the famous one that I remember was the Hemi Cuda convertible, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there were others. Chrysler just didn't put together a car very well in those days. You'd get a test car. Now, you know, you're a magazine, you're going to write to a national audience. You think that the cars would be as well put together as they could be, but it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
So we'd get a test car, the carpet would be pulling up, it'd be knobs, you know, falling off, the headliner would be hanging down, whatever. And, you know, true to the readers' interest, we would tell it like it is, and we would report that stuff. And sometimes the cars didn't run right. For instance, street Hemis in those days did not run that well on the street because they had big ports, big valves, 2 4-barrel carburetors. They didn't make much low-end torque.
Right.
They were dynamite top-end, but, you know, not many guys were running top-end on the Southern State Parkway.
Right.
Over 100 miles an hour. It was more light-to-light stuff.
Right.
40s ran better, light-to-light, the way you got them off the showroom floor. And this is the kind of stuff we would write. And we'd get Mopar lovers, bless their souls, who would write us letters, you know, like things about our mother, you know, our grandmother, you know, you know,
and but from being from New York, you know how to take that.
Write that about Mother Mopar, you know. And so we like the passionate car owners.
Yeah.
And when they disagreed with us, that was fine. That was their privilege.
Right.
With the magazine.
You had a laugh. You had a laugh.
Yeah. I still have a couple of the letters. They're classics, you know.
Great. I'm sure, you know, you've wanted to fire off a few witty retorts of your own, because, like I said, being from New York, that stuff doesn't surprise you. You heard that, right. You heard that growing up.
In fact, you know, we used to say the more we rile up the readers, the better our readership.
There you go.
So, yep. Not that we were going out of our way to look for negatives, but when they were there, we reported them.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was one that still cracks me up to this day, Joe, when I hear that, because that was that grit and that tell-it-all style that we were
New
just
New York
talking.
Style.
Exactly.
No,
and,
no BS. Let's just tell it like it is.
And, you know, and Marty had the formula. He knew that would sell magazines, and Joe was the perfect guy to convey that message because...
Hell yeah.
You hear his voice. I mean, he was as sweet of a man as he sounded. He was. He could be just down and dirty. I mean, he really could tell it like it was. He knew what to do for radio. He really did.
He definitely shone through for sure.
But he definitely knew. He knew his stuff. So as Joe found out, not all Mopars were dogs, like he said with that 440. So this is a story about one car that didn't make it into that book, and it'll make you a B-body fan. The B-body fans happy for sure. Let's see what happened with that occasion right now.
Did the notes belie or change your memory of any of these cars, or was it pretty much how you remembered the...
It was pretty much how I remembered. I was surprised by a couple of things I came across, a car I didn't include in the book. It was a 68 Charger with a Hemi engine.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
When I remember looking through the notes and saying, hey, this Hemi engine car actually ran well on the street, because most of them didn't, you know. The Hemi was a detuned race engine. It had these huge ports, gigantic valves, 8 barrels of carburation.
Right.
It really didn't make any low-end torque on the street.
Sure.
So a good running 440 would just, you know, run it down every time. But this one happened to run very well. And, you know, that was one of the things that I hadn't remembered. I had to lump them all into, you know, didn't run well on the street category. So it gave me a chance to, you know, relive those great, great old days, I'll tell you.
And there you go. There you have it. That was exactly what we were talking about. I drove 8 barrels of fun today getting here, and it was it definitely gets your attention.
Yeah, 8 barrels of Pontiac fun, but
well,
8 barrels is 8 barrels,
I'll take it anyway.
Roll out the barrels.
That was the thing. You know, Joe, we're going to take a quick break here on Motor Mouth Radio with your host, Ray Guarino, and co-host, Joe D. And we're going to come back with maybe the biggest Mopar story of all that Joe broke.
Oh.
And that's one you don't want to miss, because this is the one that when people still talk about it to this day, and it had legs. Like Joe found out years later, the story followed him in ways that he never even knew about. So
it was the old school version of going viral.
You're right. That's exactly what it was. And when Chris heard about this, he knew the car because he read the magazine back in the day. I had never read it. I was totally oblivious. I was learning. It was all new to me.
Right.
But Chris knew about it, and so that goes to prove if Chris knew about it and it was hot rod stuff.
It was probably towards the top of the stack in his bathroom.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. So that's it. Let's take a break. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Motor Mouth Radio and our tribute to Joe Oldham. Keep it where you got it.
Run, a run, a do run, run, whoa, ho, run, a run, a do run, run, whoa, ho, run, a run, a do run, run, whoa.
WHPC reminds you that smoking causes immediate damage to your body, which can lead to cancer, heart disease, smoke, asthma, and respiratory diseases such as emphysema and chronic bronchitis.
If you've tried to quit before and it didn't work, try again.
If you or someone you know wants free help, visit cdc.gov/tips or call 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Hi, I'm Rob Leonard, host of Beatles Songs for the past 24 years right here on WHPC. Beatles Songs airs every Friday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., playing the music of the Beatles together, apart, along with Beatle cover songs and songs the Beatles covered, along with songs a Beatle either guested on and or produced. And, of course, we provide Beatle news. It's not the same show where they play the same 10 songs. So join me every Friday for Beatles Songs. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College, streaming at ncc.edu/WHPC.
All right, all you car crazy cuties, you're back with Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Joe D. We're doing our Joe Oldham tribute. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention all the music we're playing on today's show is stuff that Joe mentioned in either any of his articles.
Yeah.
Or personally liked a lot. I think it was actually both. So,
yeah.
Beach this, Boys and Car Crazy Cuties.
This goes out to you up there, Joe.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And, you know, talking about, you know, more talking about Mopars there, you know, Joe addressed what's probably the most controversial report he ever wrote. The road test that launched all kinds of editorial tirades and hate mail. And, you know, it was that, you got it, when I say to you, it's that Hemi Cuda fiasco. The prehistoric version and going viral.
You're right. That's exactly right. That's the one. Let's see what Joe had to say about that. This you're going to love. Take it, Joe.
So I get assigned by my boss, Marty. Sure, go get one of those new Barracudas. You know, that was the year they changed the body style into the really pretty Barracuda style.
Mm-hmm.
It's a convertible with a street Hemi engine, a new combination. Go take the car, you know, take it to Raceway Park, test it, run it on the street if you can, you know, do a whole write-up on it. I said, okay, so Friday night I go to the garage where Chrysler keeps its cars. The guy points the car out to me. It's over in the corner. I walk over. Right away I know there's a problem. There's red fluid all over the floor of the garage under the car.
Mm.
So, you know, I go under. I look at it. It's obviously transmission fluid. So it starts up. Just barely goes into gear. That's how empty it was. I get it to a gas station. I fill it up with transmission fluid. Get it home. The next morning, I look under. There's a little bit of fluid. I fill it up again. I go to Raceway Park in Englishtown. I do some photography right away because I had in my mind this car was going to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
So I said, let me get something in the can. So no matter what happens, I have some still photos of it. You know, we got some good photos, you know, running gentle shots. You know, we were easy with the car. So I say, okay, let's do a burnout. I have the guy who was with me pulls to the line. First run, boom, the seal that was leaking blows out.
Sure.
Transmission fluid all over the starting line.
Oh, they like that at the track.
Oh, yeah. The Knapp brothers, who were great to me, Vinny and Rich, they were nice guys, let me use the track whenever I wanted. You know, I had to call them. They had to clean up the mess.
Yeah, they were loving you now.
Oh, man. So I was... I get a flatbed, get it back to the garage.
Mm.
About a week later, the PR guy calls me. Okay, it's all ready for you, you know. I go back. I look under. It's still leaking, but it's not like pouring out. So I figure, okay, you know, let me get this thing done and over with.
And this is a brand new car.
This is a brand new car.
Yeah.
In fact, it was so new. It turned out, I didn't know it that day, but it turned out it was the first Barracuda convertible built for the 1970 model year, okay?
Wow.
This was in the fall of 69 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
They used to come out in October,
right,
the cars for the following model year. So I get it to the track, you know, it's not really shifting well, but I get through the test, we do burnout shots, I get all the photography. And, you know, I just wanted to get rid of it, you know.
Mm.
So I give the car back. Now, it turns out, now this is what, 70, this is like 40 years later, we can look back, and this is what we know about that particular car. It was the first Hemi Barracuda convertible they built that year.
Wow.
Now, wait, they only built 14 of them the whole year.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how rare that combination was.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only red-on-red car they made that year.
Yes.
Right.
So it became a very famous car because there were only 14 of them to begin with, and was the only red one with a red interior, right?
Actually, you know, Joe, that was red on red on red, if you count the tranny fluid on the floor, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Good point.
Okay.
Good point. So this car becomes famous. The Danbury Mint used it to make their model.
I have the model, yeah.
Okay. Wow. So it became a real, I mean, a collector car among collector cars.
Right.
So, of course, that day when it blew the transmission, I couldn't give a damn. I just wanted to get the thing back to the garage, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's a collector's item. So 10 years later, my friend and I are walking down the row of collector cars at a car show, and I see the nose of a red Barracuda up ahead.
Right.
I say, Cliff, you know, that looks like that car I tested.
That looks like that piece of junk that I tested.
So we go up to it, and sure enough, it's a red-on-red convertible, and the guy has, as part of his display, has my article standing next to it. And I said, is this that? He says, yeah, that's the actual car they used to test. So I said, there's only one way to tell. I crawl under. You know, the thing was still leaking transmission fluid from the same seal. I swear to God. So I knew it was the actual car.
Sure.
And I started talking to the guy. I told him, that's my article. I wrote it, blah, blah, blah. He asked me to sign it. I signed it for him.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, Joe, that it doesn't get much better than that.
That's oof.
We had done two interviews with Joe. In the second interview, he told that same story about meeting the guy at his house.
That tends to stick in your head. Yeah, a little bit tremendous. Ooh, Hemi Cuda convertible. Ooh,
yeah,
it leaks. It needs the pens.
They sent Joe out to the garage before the owner came out, and he says, "I couldn't resist. I had to bend down." He goes, and the owner walks in. He goes, "I never met the guy." And he says, "Hey, Joe, are you looking for a leak?" And Joe's like, yeah. He goes, well, we fixed it. So I said, yeah. I said, they should have given you the seal, you know, that old leaky seal. Cause it's such a. But listen, you got to look into this. Muscle Car Confidential, Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver, Joe Oldham, OLDHAM. It was published by Motor Books. Check this book out. If you're a car guy and you like road tests, if you like hot rods, you like muscle cars, you grew up like we did, I could not stop reading this book when I got it. Check it out. I think you're going to love it. Until then, we're going to talk about another highly controversial road test that was about a car on the fringes of the muscle car realm. It wasn't really wasn't a Mopar or Chevy or, you know, like one of the ones we would commonly think.
Oh, yeah.
And unlike that leaky Cuda, this car was losing parts, even when it wasn't being thrashed at Raceway Park, just driven down the street. Let's hear Joe.
Chris used to have problems like this at one time.
He did. Yes. Well, Chris's cars, but yeah, not being a muscle car, his cars used to lose parts too.
Yeah, so it don't count.
He would glue and weld them back on, and, you know, he just took a page out of
JD Weld.
Yeah. So let's hear what Joe has to say about that on Motormouth Radio.
I'm sure you remembered the problems you had with that AMC, right? The Javelin was fit and finished.
It's funny. We wanted to like that car.
Mm-hmm.
Myself and the other guys at the magazine, Marty Shore was my boss. He was the editorial director. A guy named Fred McArod, who still does public relations work in the automotive field for General Motors. We were a little pool of guys in this office, and we produced these magazines. And we always liked AMC cars. We even had a Javelin project car. They loaned us a car for a year, and we customized it and put on different wheels. And, you know, project cars, you tweak the engines and whatever. And we liked AMC cars. But this Javelin, the Javelin / AMX, when they combined the two models, it literally fell apart around us.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the guys had the car one day, and he pulls up to a light, and he feels a clump, and the thing kind of drops. And the wheel goes rolling by him through the intersection, the right rear wheel. Mm. It just had broken off.
Yeah.
So he took a picture of the thing laying on the ground, and we ran the picture.
Right.
And when that story came out in the magazine, all hell broke loose out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where AMC was located.
In fact, if people want to see that, Joe, it's on page 150 in your book.
Yeah.
Looking at it now.
The wheel broken off?
Yeah.
Wow.
I told you that was something else. When when that happens on a test drive, anyway.
Talk about bad impressions.
And I see you flipping through the book for page 150 to find it, right?
Yeah, because I wanted to see that again, because that was kind of... That's enough to induce some PTSD in some people, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Especially when you really want to like a car, you know what I mean? And it does stuff like that to you.
What's worse is when it's your car and it does that.
Seriously. Yeah. That's got to be rough. What would you call that? What would you term that? That would be a...
auto self-destruction.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It would be verstutzt. Or poofticated.
That's good. And speaking of that, why don't you tell us about this next clip?
Yeah, I mean, we always use terms, some people needed the magic decoder ring to understand. So it was natural for us to ask Joe about the relationship between Fred McElrod and Dilbert Farb.
Right. That was one that I said, Dilbert Farb. So you're right, and that's a beauty. So let us hear Joe tell us all about that on Motormouth Radio. Take it, Joe.
Can you tell us a little bit about Dilbert Farb?
Dilbert Farb?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Fred is one of the most creative guys I ever met in my life, and one of the funniest. He has a tremendous sense of humor. He was the managing editor at High Performance Cars, and he used to dream up these things that lent that extra little bit of spice to the magazine package each month. And one of the things he dreamed up was kind of a parody of a car magazine article. He created this character called Dilbert Farb, and he dressed up as the character, and then he did things like road test a garbage truck, road test a child's car bed, and it was just hilarious when you read his stuff in the magazine, and it was that added little touch that just made cars a little different from all the other car magazines.
So it was like a little dash of Mad Magazine in with, little Alfred E. Newman.
Exactly. National Lampoon, anything you want to think of that was satirical like that, that's what Dilbert Farb was. It was a satire on our own magazine in a way. And the ironic part today is Fred is a very successful public relations executive. He has his own public relations agency called Fred McElrod and Associates, and he has car companies. He has the General Motors account for the entire East Coast, and he went entirely corporate, except he never did. He shows up at the meetings in a flannel shirt, and he's still the same guy, but he's enormously successful today, and also a great friend.
That's great.
Wow, Dilbert Farb.
Yeah, Dilbert Farb. Joe, we only wish that we could work for a guy as cool as that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That would make going to work make it easier to wake up in the morning, show up, and like, oh, what are we going to do today?
Instead of you coming in and saying, hey, listen, you know what? We got a check engine light. We got a 171 coder. We got a communication console.
I walk in like Al Bundy. Fat woman came into the shop today.
Imagine you go in and the boss says, hey, Joe, today, you see that backhoe? Yeah, you got to test drive it and take it to the drag strip and see what your best time can be.
Okay.
Let's see how much smoke we can make with the tires on that GTO.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you can't make up stuff like this, folks. You just can't do it. Nor can you imagine how talking about Pontiac tri-power induction could ever lead to peanut brittle and nuts.
Peanut brittle?
Unless you know us, right?
Yeah, we're nuts.
So
I'll
let Joe do the explaining, and we'll cover that right now here on Motor Mouth Radio.
I got to tell you something. I just met a fellow yesterday, a good friend of ours, a good friend of the show, Dan, took me out to meet a fellow who owned a carburetor business for 39 years. His name is Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Phil ran a carburetor shop in Atlantic Avenue near Woodhaven Boulevard in Ozone Park. It was called Fair Deal.
I used to have my tri-power setup rebuilt by him.
That's why I'm bringing it up. It was Fair Deal Carburetor. Phil should be listening now. And when I was, because I'm trying to get him as a guest on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to sell the show, so I'm throwing out the A-list. I said, listen, we had Marty Shore, we had Joe Oldham. He said, Joe, did you say Joe Oldham? I'm like, yeah, why? Joe photographed my car, put it in a magazine. I was like, when? Last week? He's like, no, it was back in 72. You did it on Broad Channel. on Crosby Boulevard. He had a 69 Hearst Rambler.
Right.
And he said you put it in Cars Magazine. So, again, like I said before about those circles connecting.
That's true.
It's just another one. So, Phil, if you're listening, get in here.
And I don't know if Phil remembers, but I bought a tri-power setup off a guy on Jamaica Avenue in Brooklyn, and I put it on my 59 Pontiac, and it didn't run. The carburetors really were messed up, and some guy said, oh, you got to go to this guy, you know, he's a magician with carburetors. I took it there, and he set up my system. He rebuilt two of the carbs. It ran fantastic after that, so... Wherever you are, thank you, guy. You made my Pontiac run well.
Yeah, well, Phil should be listening now, and I'm sure he's smiling out in the garage. So
that's great.
We'll get him in and talk to him about that, because he's not doing carburetors. He does them on the side, but, you know, because the business, of course, kind of dried up with the advent of fuel injection.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But, it's cool when you hear names come back from the past in a positive way.
Everybody's connected to somebody, right?
We're learning that.
In this hobby, I'm telling you, there's a lot more of it than I ever knew.
It is amazing. It is totally amazing how the web is woven so tightly. And we're just finding this out right now. Yeah. It's
And you guys like you and your show are the glue. You know, you all come to you, and that's what keeps us all stuck together.
Well,
someone other close to us told us we were like the like peanut brittle. It was kind of like, you know, like a family.
We stick to your shoe.
Yeah, the family's kind of like peanut brittle. It's the nuts and the goo that keep it together.
Right, we stick to the roof of your mouth.
And we took it as a compliment.
Yeah. Hey, whatever works.
Yeah, whatever works, Joe. Instead of me, like, I was tripping over my own tongue on that piece.
So which one of us is the nut and which one of us is the goo?
I think we kind of share the responsibility very equally.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
At any given time, it's a symbiotic
slurry. So that's
slurry.
That squishy noise that I hear when I walk. Okay.
It's a little squinge,
squinge,
yeah.
Yep.
So we're gonna take another quick break, Joe, and give ourselves a little breathing room here. And when we come back,
We're going to go Chevy here
in a big way. The cover of the book that shows a certain Camaro we're going to talk about. This is the bigger story than that Hemi Cuda was any day.
Well, yeah, it's Camaro. Come on.
But as you'll find out a little later on, one of Joe's favorite bands besides doo-wop was Chuck Berry. He wrote a piece for Hemmings Magazine. If you Google Joe Oldham Hemmings Road Songs, you'll find out that he talked about songs that were so quintessential to the car hobby and to car guys. And this was the particular one that he called out. So let's go out a little bit of this in memory of our good friend Joe Oldham.
This show is brought to you in part by A Garfield Christmas,
where Garfield is a few gifts short of a true Christmas spirit.
But with the help of John, Odie, the audience, and his new holiday friends, Garfield gets an enlightening lesson in this holiday musical.
For ticket information, you may visit venue.thetheateratwestbury.com.
Hi, this is Zach Turkel. Join me and the WHPC News team weekday afternoons at 4:30 for the WHPC News Wrap-Up. We will keep you informed on news that's happening around the world and from your own backyard. Listen weekday afternoons at 4:30, the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC, and streaming on the iHeartRadio app.
Opa! Yahtzee!
Hi, this is Teddy Savalas, and I invite you to 2 hours of vintage and modern Greek music with a mix of Greek mythology, history, culture, and dynamic English vocabulary based on Greek roots. If after listening you end up saying it was all Greek to you, I'll be thrilled. So until then, let out an opa and dance to the music on The Soul of Alas, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC. Opa!
Every sound, every note, including the bass, on this track is played by a monkey.
American Hit Radio, Wednesdays and Fridays at 5 p.m. on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Started back doing the thing you used to do.
we're going to start back doing the things we used to do here on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Joe D, and we are in the middle of our Joe Oldham tribute. This is something that's a little new for us. And here's Joe. we're trying to do this in the vein of the Motormouth Radio Mother's Day show that Chris and I had always done. I'm trying to channel the master.
The greatest hits.
We have the master on our show today. Joe, he was the best car writer we ever knew and the best car emissary that there ever was, I think. So
yeah, it goes back a long ways. Yep.
Yeah.
But and, yeah, go ahead.
Tell
yeah.
us, Joe. Now we're gonna, after the, we promised after the break we'd come back with a biggie. So let's
oh,
hear
good.
It.
So you know, a car guy's dream was fulfilled when Joe bought a 69 SS427 Motion Camaro. I just get like a chill saying that.
You know
what I mean? And to top it off, the car became a media star on its own too. Also, so. I don't know how that'll work out.
Well, let's hear what Joe's got to say. And this was something that's just, it gives me chills. Joe's got to tell us. Here we go.
Yeah, bring it on, Joe.
So I went to the new car previews in Detroit that summer, and I saw the 69 Camaro. Hmm. And I said, you know, this is it. I got to have one of these. So when I went back to New York, I called up Joel Rosen, and I said, I got to have a 69 SS427. He said, all right, you know, and in those days, he'd build anything you wanted. Just keep peeling off the $100 bill. That's how we worked.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we spec'd out a car that was going to be something that I could still drive on the street, and, you know, not a ridiculous car that you could only run on the track. And it was a beautiful car, and, you know, if you get the book, it's actually doing a burnout on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
The one time I took it to the track. Unfortunately, that car was stolen from me about
right.
6 months after I got it. So
yeah.
it had a short lifespan in the Oldham household.
Right, right.
But it's still a car that, you know, people remember like yourself,
mm-hmm.
and they talk to me about it. And it's funny, I see blogs now on the internet where these guys talk about Joe Oldham's Motion Camaro.
Really?
Wow.
That's the blog, you know.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, people say, oh, no, it had different wheels first, you know.
Yeah.
It happens to be the car that Motion Performance used in all their advertising that year.
Right.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was, I don't know if you remember that Wanted poster. That
yes.
One of their,
yes.
That was actually my car. I let them use it before they turned it
yeah.
the final version where I had the SS stripes taken off and
yeah.
and Keystone wheels put on. He, you know, he
yeah.
had Americans.
Yeah.
So it was actually that car, and it was in some other ads also, besides just being my own car, you know, that yeah. I did some articles on.
Absolutely. I keep hitting your mic button and not mine. That was
nobody wants to hear me.
That was definitely a car guy's dream full wait a minute, where am I? I got to read my script. I'm looking at the phone and I'm looking at the I can't do too many things at once.
You're like me. You suck at multitasking.
Yeah, apparently so. Well, for every joy of muscle car ownership, there's usually a downside. Joe's came after his prized Camaro was liberated from his parking spot.
How politely said.
But not without a fight. Right, so get a load of this story. We'll hear how Joe scrapped, and as only Joe could tell us.
They got it from me one day, and we were still living in Rego Park at the time, and I used to park in an underground garage under the building. I guess they saw me go in, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I come down to go to dinner with my wife one night, and there are two guys, right, around the car, like working a hanger in there and whatever. So I go running over. I jump on one guy. He went down. The other guy hit me with something. I don't know what it was.
Oh, my gosh.
I went down and they ran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saved the car.
Right.
But for how long?
Well, that was it. Then every night after that, like every 45 minutes, I used to go down with a jack if they had come back, you know?
Yeah.
It was a little tense for a while. Then one morning, I come down, and sure enough, it was gone.
Oh, boy.
And the thing is, all the cars you drove that were not yours that you could have explained away, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, your own personal car gets jacked on
you. Good point. Exactly
yeah.
right. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. I mean, you know, we all know being car guys what it's like. Luckily, I've never had a car stolen. Well, because all my cars are crap. Nobody wanted it.
Not good when you say that, son.
You know, but
it's not a fun experience.
Unbelievable. So that was the saga of the Motion Camaro, and in later years, Scott's two sons made a recreation. They got a recreation built for Joe of that exact car.
Yeah,
Steve and Scott, which is fantastic. They really helped out Dad, which is fantastic.
Now that's good kids.
Yeah,
you listening out there? You know who you thought you are.
Yeah, right.
You know, start saving up that tip money now. You know,
there you go.
Should we go back to that book? That book's terrific. We were all curious to see what happened Joe to write in the first place. And we weren't totally surprised when we found out what a true car guy, would never retire. Nah, it gets in your blood. It never comes out.
That's right.
You know, so, like, let's see what he has to say there.
Let's go. Joe can tell it best.
The thing about that book, I don't know if I ever told you, Ray, but when I retired in 2004, I retired. I didn't want to work anymore. Mm-hmm. But this publisher, Motor Books, it's called Motor Books Incorporated.
Right.
One of the editors there heard that I had retired and knew that before I was the editor of Popular Mechanics for many years, I did this. Mm-hmm. I did the muscle car stuff for magazines. And, you know, he was sending me emails and asking me if I wanted to write a book, and I really, you know, I didn't want. If I wanted to keep working, I would have kept working. That was my attitude. But he said, you know, you were back. Maybe you want to do something with muscle cars, if not modern stuff. You know, you did that too back in the day, and that kind of lit a bulb in my mind. And I remembered that when I was testing these cars, I saved all the photos I took.
That's great. Wow.
And I saved all my notes from every test. I'm kind of a pack rat, I guess. So
join the club.
Yep.
Yeah. So I had all these notes and all these photos, and that's why it was fun for me to do the book, because I got a chance to go back and look through all that material that I had saved.
Just talk about pack rats, huh? He's telling us about pack rats.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Like, we'll see here and we could talk about hoarding and pack ratting and all that kind of stuff. Car guys never get it out of their blood.
Right.
You know, no matter what happens. Once you're out, you can get out, but they keep pulling you back.
That's
you
right.
You know, so that's nothing new, and that just shows you he's truly one of us. He was truly one of us.
And he still is in spirit. And I'll tell you, every creative person has people who inspire them, and Joe is no different. Here he shares with us one of the men who he looked up to, who we all knew as journalists.
Ooh.
And after that, I think we're going to have a very, very special guest on the show with us to wrap this up with our last few clips. We'll save that for later, but first let's go back to Joe.
Joe, as a writer, who did you look up to as a writer? When, you know, I think of it this way, as a radio guy, I like to appropriate different styles from other radio people. So do writers do the same thing?
Well, I know I did. When I was still in college, some days I used to go to a newsstand and buy like 10 car magazines. And instead of going to class, I'd sit in my car in the parking lot and just read car magazines.
Nice. We still do it.
I know it's, you know, I'm glad maybe my kids did do the same thing. I don't know. But I hope they didn't. But in any case, I came to read a guy named Roger Huntington, who was an extraordinary person. I'll tell you a little bit about him in a minute. I got to know him later on, but he used to write in a way that I just could relate to. And when I was still taking journalism classes in college, I used to try to emulate his style.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great influence on my early career, because he kind of pointed the way to expressing yourself about cars and engines and suspensions. And I was just so taken with the guy and his writing style that, as I said, I tried to emulate him.
Right.
And later on, I found out, I met him at some press events, and he was a quadriplegic who was always assisted by someone. And he would test the car by being lifted into the car strapped into the passenger seat, and he'd have all his instrumentation and stuff.
Wow.
And he would get his sensations through the passenger seat and then write his articles.
Wow.
Holy.
He might have, you know, because of his condition, he may have had more insight than
exactly
other people. Yeah.
Right. More wow. sensitive to acceleration sure. and deceleration and handling and G-forces.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm sure that entered into it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an extraordinary guy, and I feel like I owe him a lot in terms of learning to write to an audience and conveying thoughts about cars and parts. And he was a great influence on me. Mm-hmm. So thank you for asking that.
I can tell you this, if you want to take that influence and write a second part of this book, you know there's a couple guys here going to pick it up right away.
You betcha. Exactly.
Infectious.
Thank you, Ray and Chris. You guys are great.
We're gonna...
I love coming on the show. You make me feel like I'm actually good.
Well, Joe, you are. you were, you are, and what can we say? It's
Thank you, guys.
That was great. That was a warm thanks from Joe. And
did I see the phone flashing just now?
You did.
What Jid Rule decided to try to call in the middle of the Joe Oldham tribute?
I'm listening to Motormouth Radio, and I hear my own voice. I'm like, how the heck did that happen? What is this?
My Wait
technology?
A minute.
Can you get to hear the radio? What's up, guys?
Is that my nephew?
Ladies and gentlemen, the man, the myth, the legend, my radio father here on Motormouth Radio, Mr. Chris Switzer has joined us.
You know, after that introduction, I really don't know what I'm going to say.
You plagiarist, you.
Hey, I take after the best.
You know what?
Love the show, guys. Joe Oldham was a wonderful, wonderful individual. And Ray, one of the best interviews I think you and I ever gave. He was just a spectacular author and columnist. And I just love what you guys are doing as a tribute for him. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you. Well, like
if
I said,
anybody deserves it.
When I said to Joe, you know, I wanted to do it, the first thing that jumped into my head was Mother's Day. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unlike Mother's Day, where you culled clips from the whole year, God bless your soul, I only had two interviews to go from, which took me a week. You know?
Well, let me tell you, I had too many clips of your co-host over there, Ray. Joe, you had given me so many clips to put into the Mother's Day show and into the promos that we did in the beginning of every show, and it was always comical. It was always a laugh, and I'm very glad you have risen to the ranks of a spectacular host on that mediocre program.
Is that a nice way of saying I scarred you?
I'm not there.
Stop.
Right.
Stop. I just listened to you guys and tried to catch on, and you know, I actually took my cues from the best here, you know?
And you're doing a fantastic job. It's a fantastic job. It's a good listen.
I could see your standards haven't changed much, but I'll take the compliment anyway.
So I tell you what, listen, because I'm the ringmaster here, keeping with our format, Joe's going to introduce our next clip, Chris, and I think it's one that you're going to remember very fondly.
Okay.
Yeah, well...
Page three.
Yeah, is that page... No, two. No. If you listen to this show, you know that we always talk about the relationship between car guys and music. Oh, God, do we ever. I mean, let's face it, the two are interlocked. And true to form, Joe shared our thoughts. Exactly.
Let's hear what Joe had to say, Chris. And, you know, one of the things I think of, because I'm really into music, I always think of, like, what kind of music were these guys into? What were they listening to? What turned them on back then, you know, band-wise?
You know, it's funny you mention that. Right now, as you guys know, I am retired.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a little bit of freelance here and there. One of the magazines I write for is Hemmings Muscle Machines.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I just did an article for them on muscle music.
Oh, wow.
You know, the songs that were popular back then that were about cars.
Uh-huh.
And it brought back so many great memories. I went and I dug out some of my old 45s and took pictures of the label to illustrate the story, you know. And
very cool.
You know, I mean, like the first street race ever recorded was Maybelline by Chuck Berry. You know?
Yeah, back in the 50s. Yeah.
Right.
You know, it was his Ford racing her Coupe de Ville.
Right. Exactly.
And it was really a street race if you listen to the words.
Sure.
And then, of course, all the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shut down, you know, a fuel-injected Stingray in a 413 Mopar. And, you know, there were so many songs back then that were specifically telling you about car experiences and street racing. It was really a reflection of our culture at that time.
Mm. Yeah, sure was, how ingrained it was.
Yeah, I you know, music, I think, if you follow the history of it, it kind of does reflect the culture that it was created in. So I think it was a great window onto what we were all doing back in the 60s, you know?
Yeah. Well, again, like, the thing I thought of was, like, you know, I'm picturing you driving your, well, for a short time, your Motion Camaro.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, you know, gee, was he listening to, like, you know, the Doors? Was he getting turned on by the Doors and Grand Funk, or was it more of a Fifth Dimension kind of guy, you know? Because you don't know. You know, it just, those are little stupid things that intrigue me.
Right.
You know?
Well, what I was really into back then was doo-wop.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I was in some groups. I used to stand on the street corner and sing, and nice. We made a few records. And cool. So, and I'm still a great fan of that music because that was the music of my youth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a drummer, and I used to play in gigs locally, and so that was my music, the doo-wops. And then eventually I evolved into jazz. I like jazz, and I still do. Some of the guys from the 50s and 60s, like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and big band stuff like Dizzy Gillespie. And so that and the doo-wop oldies, of course, they were newies then.
Right.
But you know, that was my music.
Yeah, CBS, Don K. Reed didn't have an oldies show. He had a contemporary show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you had Cousin Brucey, and you had, before him, Alan Freed and Murray the K, and all these New York DJs.
Oh, yes. Chris, I'm sure you remember that little walk down memory lane, though.
Oh, totally. Yeah, sure.
See, car guy, music guy, they definitely coalesce.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, Chris, I just sent you a text, but I guess you're on phone. Did I send you the script already for this, or had I neglected to do that?
I don't recall getting the script. No, what?
All right, because I was going to have you read the ending one. That would have been great.
Yeah.
So I will do this. You know, I got to say, when I played, what did I play? What was the first track I played? Was Speedo. Joe had, he said he was in a doo-wop band. I found out his group, which was called the Checkers, ended up being a backup group for these guys, the Five Discs.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
I just found the CD yesterday at Infinity Records. Rob's hangout. So,
damn.
And Rob would hear, but he's snoring
in
the other room.
Love them bowling shirts, man.
Yeah.
Rob snoring in the other room? What a surprise.
Yes,
it's like
is.
Charlie Sheen's ancestry.
I know. So we actually found a little bit of Joe's ancestry here with the Five Discs. But I got to say, it's been a bittersweet show for all of us. And Chris, I'm glad you were able to join us for this.
I'm glad you were able to have me. I appreciate it very much.
What, you finally found the dial? You fixed the radio in the car? Why?
Yeah. I just get a lot of static from up here. You don't really pick up too much.
No, that's actually marriage.
We get some down here too. Don't worry. We really
it's that too.
Yeah, we really loved hearing the great stories that Joe shared with us, and we're sad that we won't get to hear any more of them, of course. And we hope that after us sharing these clips with the listeners, they'll go out and pick up that book because it is fantastic reading. And like Joe said, hey, buy my book. Go buy it. Mm-hmm. And Joe, one of these days we'll be looking for you on the streets of heaven where we'll burn some rubber and eat some burgers. So, Chris, we're just going to hear this last clip of Joe, and then we're going to keep you on because we're going to talk a little bit. So,
all right, sounds good.
Let's hear from Joe.
Plug my book. Just tell people if they want to buy it, they can go to motorbooks.com, and it's right there. That's the publisher's website.
Joe, we also have a link on motormouthradio.com under the Traveling Authors series, and we'll have a link to your book right up on there as well, where
Beautiful.
People can
Thank
find it.
You guys. Hey, I miss Long Island too.
And it misses you as well,
it
Joe.
Sure does.
Could it, use you around here.
Yeah.
All right, I'll meet you at the Bow Wow.
You got
you
it.
Got it.
White right, Castle, guys. Maybe. Thanks,
Take
Joe.
Care. Take care, Joe. Bye bye.
All right. All right, and that actually does conclude our pre-programmed, you actually heard the edit in that one, that was a little sloppy on my part, I guess.
I wonder if White Castle in Heaven still makes you have stomach problems, was that one of the perks of having to get it up there?
I think you may get exonerated, you may get a pass, what do you think, Chris, is that a...
Oh. I'm still, like, leering over the big Bow Wow. Holy smokes, I haven't seen that place in 100 years.
Oh, and they go, we were trying, I was just talking to someone about that the other day, and they said, where is that? Can I find, and I said, no, we had to go out of business, I think it was, like, in the 70s,
I guess. I haven't seen it since, like, the
70s. Probably early 80s, yeah. I would say.
Early 80s? Okay.
Yeah.
So, like most things, okay, Kim's looking for the CD player. Which one can she use? Because I'm doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Yeah, this one.
Okay. Wow.
Yes, that's CD.
I got like seven of them over there. Pick one.
I know, but usually...
Flip a coin.
Usually, I'm just playing off of two. This time
I'm partial to Miney myself.
Yeah, this time I'm...
I don't know.
I monopolized today. I took over.
Is Kim standing behind you waiting to go?
Kim is standing right next to me, yes.
Okay, good.
She's getting ready.
Let me tell you, great men are always the ones that are remembered after they're gone. And a guy like Joe Oldham, I think, will always be remembered even through his columns and obviously through his book. It's just he was a joy to have to share with us as far as with his writing. And believe me, the Hemi Cuda convertible piece that I read many, many years ago still
Classic.
Rings true in my head. It was just a great article from a great man.
And, absolutely.
And that's all that really I could say about him. And I love the fact that you guys have actually tribute him,
well,
gave him the tribute and gave him an hour of your time.
I felt like I knew the man, even though we only knew him through the show, and I did have a few private conversations with him on the phone.
Right.
But you know, he was such an endearing guy, and he embraced us. He really did.
That's the mark of a great guy right there.
Yeah.
So,
what, did he likes us?
Well, we could forgive him a couple of foibles.
Yeah, exactly.
He is human, feet of clay and all that stuff. But, a guy like that, that's on that level, that's approachable and relatable, that right there shows you what a great person he was.
And and I have to say, his boss, his old boss, Marty Shore, will be back on with us in a few weeks when he gets settled again in early December, because Marty has a new book that just came out called Day One. And it's about all the day two modifications that were done to cars back in the day.
Ooh.
So, Chris, this is another one that you would like because, that's typical Marty style.
Yeah, right? Day two. Because day one never quite works out the way you want it to.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that New York grit, it always is always appealing to all of us, I'm sure.
Yeah, basically, it's like, sigh, write the list.
Right. So speaking of
go
grit.
Go home, eat dinner.
Speaking of grit, how are your cars doing, Chris?
Oh, fine. Not a problem. I don't touch the TR6. It still sits there. It looks at me.
Right.
I look at it. That's really it. Cop car is still running. I told you. I spend most of my time I'm slumming it with a Subaru.
Yeah.
So I trash around a little Subaru Forester around the hills and dales of glorious scenic Connecticut and watching the leaves fall and watching the moss grow on my shorts, and that's really about it.
So you've become a suburbanite.
Yeah. I have. Yeah. I am that guy.
I just told Joe the story before the show that, Jenny, my daughter, is now at school in the city, and the protege sits in front of the house, kind of like your cars had done.
Mm.
And last night she went to use it, and the freaking battery was dead. So I got the battery. I took that out of Lauren's wrecked Stratus. I have it on charge. That's my afternoon project, to get that thing fired up again.
I'm just amazed that little Mazda's still chugging along. I think that's fantastic.
It's got its issues. There's a few little drivability things that Joe's been helping me sort out, but we're...
15 years old, still chugging,
Oh, my gosh.
And see what happens when you take care of a car.
Have you washed it since the last time I borrowed it?
I did. Oh, yeah, 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 man. In fact, I did it just...
yeah, it rained.
About a month ago, I took it in because under the tree it got dirty. I said, no, I blew out the all the leaves, and then I said, hey, you know what? I'd wash my car. Let me do that one, too.
Yeah.
Very cool. Joe, how's the Z28, Joe?
Oh, yes. It's living in the UD. It spent a month or two outside in the driveway while I was working on a GTO and a Ford sedan delivery, but it's back in spot, and the list just grows longer as I acquire more parts and stuff for it. Now all I need is time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we all need. It's
yes, but it's still dear to my heart. Mike's driven it a couple times, and he actually cut his teeth on it. And that we know where that's that's headed after I lose my leg here.
Well, guess what, gentlemen? Guess what we're out of?
Time.
Time. We got to go. Kim is ready to go. She's got getting her show ready.
Yeah, that axe looks very sharp.
Chris, we will talk to you again very soon. Thanks for giving us the call. We love that you were part of this with us.
I hope so. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I still love the show.
Excellent. Thank you. And
glutton for punishment that you are.
We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Take care, Swizz.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we're going to go out with a very special one for Mr. Joe Oldham from Ray Guarino, Joe D, Motormouth Radio. We'll be back again soon. Keep it away.